So I appreciate the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission sending us some masks, and we have Dr. Jose Romero that has a Game and Fish Commission mask, as well as Secretary Johnny Key, who've joined me today for today's COVID daily update. And I'm also pleased to be joined today by Superintendent Dr. Brian Duffy of Jacksonville School District, who will make a few comments about what's happening in his district as they get ready for this school year. Let me start off today, and as you know, we're focusing some on education and getting ready for school, and so this is just one of many letters that I received, but this is from Rain, and I won't give his last name because I don't have his permission, but from Rain in Conway, and he says, Dear Governor Hutchinson, my name is Rain, and I'm in the third grade. My mom is a night shift nurse, so that means she has to sleep during the day and during the night, so she can't help me with homeschool. My little sister can't help me with homeschool. My little sister was in kindergarten when you shut down schools. Most parents want their kids to at least finish kindergarten so they don't fall behind. My dad works during the day, so he can't help either. I hope you know how important it is for kids like my sister and me to be able to go to school. So can you find a safe way to keep school open? Kids shouldn't fall behind. Lots of kids will be in the same situation. Please contact me, and he leaves me his number, so I probably should call him and write me back. Sincerely, Rain. So thank you, Rain, for sharing your thoughts and your understanding of the importance of school this year with me. And with that, let me go first through the cases. I have a couple of announcements today, and we'll hear, of course, from Secretary Key and Dr. Duffy as well. And so yesterday we had 47,028 cases. Today we have an additional 1,011 cases. Now, I'll point out that we did have a very good day in testing, which I'm very pleased with, which was 6,224 tests that we did over the last 24 hours. And so with that, I have a little bit better acceptance of that number of cases, but it is still at a high level. We've had nine additional deaths. That brings us, we've had nine additional hospitalizations. That brings us to 523 that are hospitalized. We've had six additional deaths. That brings us to 521. Going back to our cases, we've had, as I said, 1,011 cases. That brings us totally to 48,039 cases, cumulative in the state of Arkansas. And of those, we have 7,158 active cases. And we have 14 counties that have over 20 cases in their county. I won't read all 14 counties, but I'll give you some of the, I believe, about the top seven. Pulaski County was at 182, but 100 of those were in the correctional facility at Wrightsville, which is part of our mass testing program and our prison facilities. And so that would really put them at 82 in Pulaski County in the community. Jefferson County had 61. Craighead County, 53. Mississippi County, 44. Sebastian County, 43. Washington County, 41. Independence County, 40. And Benton County, 32. And as I said, there are a few other counties there that had more than 20. But I won't be able to read those today. And so with that, let me go to the graphs, and we can see where we are in relation to our testing today. This is not the high water mark on testing, particularly in our community testing, which is the orange. But as I said, with the level of testing we did, it is high, and it is too high. The next one shows the 7-day rolling average, which you don't like the way it's pointed. We got to have it pointed down a different direction, and we don't want to reach that peak that we were at probably 10 days ago. And then you'll see the number of currently hospitalized, which is somewhat flat, has not reached the peak, but that is something we always watch and want to see come down. But That's one of those trailing indicators that you'll see when our cases go up. And then you'll look at the number of active cases, and that's up today. That reflects those that have tested positive minus those that have recovered. And then this is the multicolored one, but it's really instructive because, and this reflects a 7-day rolling average of new cases in Arkansas by region. And we like to follow this because it shows you success stories, but also shows the challenges, and it reminds you in the region in which you live as to what your status is. And so here again, you'll see in the top one, which is the Northwest, what looks like orange to me, you'll see where we were at the height in terms of new cases, and they've consistently trended down. Northwest is getting a better handle on their cases. And then if you look at the green, is the Southwest, and that's starting to point down as well. If you look at the yellow, which is the Central, and the Central is looking better. It was up at a high level. It went down dramatically, sort of edging up a little bit, but the trend line is still good. We just got to watch the Central region. And then the other two, the blue and the red, they're both pointing up. The blue being Northeast Arkansas, and that's probably the area of significant concern in terms of their case growth. And so I urge everyone in the Northeast region to understand the seriousness of it, the number of cases that are in your community, and to make sure that we do everything we can in terms of social distancing, mask, and avoiding the party atmosphere that might lead to those cases. And the other one is the blue, which is the Northeast I just mentioned, and then the red, which is the Southeast. And we want to continue to watch that, even though some of that is reflected by the correctional facilities. And then you can see the 7-day rolling average, and this is not good news. This is what we want to have come down, which is the positivity rate. And it's right, the current one of the 7-day rolling average is a little bit above 10%. That's what we want to have come down, and we'll continue to watch that. That's very important. And then what's the next one? All right, and this is just, we'll do that quickly, but this is the test results by facility type. And of course, we had a good testing day, and so our commercial labs produced, and our Department of Health lab produced very well as in addition to that. And then I do want to make an announcement today, and Secretary Key will be elaborating on this, but the CARES Act Steering Group considered this in general discussion the other day. This has been a proposal by the Department of Education. I want to announce my support for this today, and I know the CARES Act Steering Committee will be considering this probably next week. But I am supportive of the $20 million of CARES Act funding being allocated for our teachers and support staff, which would cover for up to 2 weeks of paid leave. And it can be used by school employees who have to quarantine for COVID-related reasons. And so we know that there's going to be a positive case in the school. We know that because of that, we might have to have a staff person that has to quarantine or a teacher that has to quarantine. Even though they're not positive, they still need to do that. And so we don't want that to come out of their ordinary leave or their pocket. And so we estimate that the best guess through the end of the year, about $20 million. And so this needs to have the CARES Act steering group to act on that. But it has my support. And this will be very important, I think, for our teachers and our support staff as well. And then finally, I wanted to announce one other thing that I've talked about before, and that is today I'm signing an executive order that follows up on the good work of our Secretary of State, John Thurston, and others, clearly defining that If you have a COVID-related concern about going to the polls in November, then you will qualify for an absentee ballot. And what we've seen since that announcement and clarification that our absentee ballot requests have increased rather dramatically. And so we're going. I signed the executive order today, and at the request of the county clerks, it will do one other thing, and that is that it will allow the county clerks to prepare the ballots in advance for counting them beginning on election day at 8:30 a.m., which is the current law. But currently, they have a week before that they can prepare the absentee ballots without opening up the envelope, but still get it prepared so that on election day it is quicker to count and they will be a little bit ahead with the number of absentee ballots that we expect during this campaign and election season. I would emphasize that the ballots cannot be opened until the law allows it at the current time, which is on 8:30 a.m. on election day. But that has been signed and will be available as well. And with that, I'll recognize Dr. Romero for his comments, followed by Secretary Keith.
Thank you, Governor. So adding more to the information about our cases in the state, we have 523 hospitalized individuals, as the governor mentioned, 9 more than the day before. We've increased the number of individuals on a ventilator at 116. There are a total, as mentioned previously, of 521 deaths, an increase of 6. We have now added 805 recovered Arkansans to the total number of 40,360. Our active cases at the moment are 7,158, comprised by 53 nursing home cases, 687 correctional cases, and 6,418 community cases. Our testing, as mentioned by the governor, went up significantly. Yesterday, we have a total positivity rate cumulative of 8.7, with 2,007 tests contributed by the health department, 439 by UAMS, and 3,778 from commercial and private laboratories. So at this point, I'll turn it back over to the governor or to Secretary Key.
Thank you, Dr. Romero. If we could go to the slide on the COVID emergency leave, just want to go into a little bit more detail on this. One of the common topics that has come up from teachers over the last few months to the governor and to us at the department is what happens when we have to quarantine or isolate. If we're a close contact or if we're a positive, are we going to have to use all of our personal leave? And then what happens when we run out of personal leave? The governor and we have taken that to heart and looked at developing a COVID-19 emergency leave for school employees that would be available to them first. This is important because they can access this leave first before they start having to take any of their other sick days or any of the other leave options that are available under FMLA or the Families First Corona program from the federal government. It's available for them to them first. The $20 million is an estimate. We try to estimate high because we certainly do not know the level of outbreaks that we could have, but we want to be prepared when and if it does happen. We also want to make sure that it's clear this is available to teachers and support staff, classified employees, such as bus drivers and cafeteria workers. That's something that was very important in the feedback that we received. So looking forward to presenting that to the CARES Act Steering Committee in the coming days. Also, I want to mention one point, that a bit of a residual point from the last time I was here, regarding the expectation for on-site learning. That has been interpreted as the department is expecting schools to have every student on campus every day. And that's not at all the expectation. The expectation is that the campuses are open for those students and those families who do need that instruction, who need those therapies, or who need that intensive support that is only available to them on campus. For instance, a district that wants to have some alternative scheduling for some students, they could still offer that for those students for whom that works, but they need to have the campus open for the other students that need that five-day-a-week opportunity. So hopefully that will clear up some of the confusion from a couple of days ago. And, Governor, with your permission, I'd like to invite Dr. Duffy to come from Jacksonville North Pulaski, who can describe some of the work that's been going on in his district.
Thank you, Secretary Key and Governor. Thank you for having me today. In Jacksonville North Pulaski, we have been preparing for the reopening of schools since early May, preparing for all kinds of contingencies. And we recognize there are concerns. There are concerns out there. However, we've got plans in place to address those concerns. We also recognize that our kids, our scholars, as we call them in Jacksonville, our scholars need us, and our teachers need them. We've had a good 4 days of professional development with our staff this week. They're in good spirits. They've got the right attitude of coming in, doing what it takes to try to get this done for our kids and their families and for each other. And our plans have been out there for a while. We have done a lot of communication efforts with families, with staff, with our community. And we will, you know, address concerns as the need arises. But right now we are ready to offer in-class instruction, virtual instruction, as needed by parents and families. And we recognize that there's, for many of our kids and families, there's just not a substitute for in-class instruction with all of the loss, the unfinished learning that happened last school year. So we are offering that option as well. And we've had very positive feedback from the community on how things are being handled, and we will just move forward and deal with situations as best we can, along with partnership with the Department of Health to address concerns as we move forward into the school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Duffy. And I understand that you also serve on Superintendent's Advisory Group, and we're grateful for your continued guidance to those that are engaged in education at every level. And so thank you for joining us today. With that, we'll turn it over for any questions. Leslie.
So can you explain again to me the ballot preparation? What's actually been allowed to happen now? I'm sorry, I wasn't able to follow.
The time frame for preparing the ballot for tabulation and for counting has been moved up. We'll get you the specific details with that executive order. That's one aspect of it, and the other aspect is, of course, through the executive order, making it clear, as the Secretary of State has, that COVID-related reasons is sufficient to request an absentee vote. But the language, we'll get that specifically to you, and we can answer any questions afterwards. Yes?
Would the proposed COVID-19 emergency leave plan be available to teachers and support staff until the end of the calendar year or the school year?
All right, so help me out to get the COVID.
Would the COVID-19 emergency leave plan, yes, for teachers be available until the end of the calendar year or until the end of the school year?
The end of the calendar year is how that is calculated, and we hope that we'll have a vaccine by that time. There'll be a school break, but if there's additional needs, we'll take a look at them at that time.
The Benton School District has a plan to have an alternating day scheduled for the first 2 weeks where, you know, kids would be on campus for 2 days a week. And then after that, they're going to evaluate that to see if they want to continue doing that. I was wondering, how does that square with what you said about wanting an on-site option? And what would the state's response be if they decide they want to continue with that option?
Andy, thank you for that question. We have been in contact with Superintendent Skelton because we've had questions about that plan, and he has clarified to us just to say that the first week is not, it's not uncommon for districts to have some type of easing back into the school year. Okay, so we're not, we don't have a problem with that. That's something that could happen in a non-COVID year. He did assure us that during the second week that the buildings, the campuses would be available for any students that needed to be there. We would expect that at the end of week two, which would be after Labor Day, that they would proceed with their schedule and with all campuses being open to those students that needed to be there. That would be the expectation of all of our districts.
With the large spike today and just generally high numbers over the past couple weeks, despite efforts to get the virus under control, do you get the feeling that the spread is out of control in our state?
I do not. Whenever you look at over the last 5 or 6 days, it's been very flat. I think everybody sees that it's been very flat. Obviously, today there's been a spike up. But you look at the overall trend line and it's flat. Now, obviously, we want it to go down, but I think whenever it's flat, that means it hasn't reached the tipping point that it is out of control.
The Jonesboro superintendent was quoted as saying that it's the governor's office who's pushing to have high school football and that it's the governor's office is trumping the division of secondary and elementary education, and that this is being driven by economic decisions. I was wondering if you would want to respond.
This is the Jonesboro superintendent. I actually did see those comments, and I want to assure her that the decisions that are being made are based upon consultations with our Department of Education, as well as with the Department of Health and CDC guidelines. They're not economic driven, they're education driven and children focused, which is the really the motto of our Department of Education. I would also read, because questions in the past have been asked about Dr. Redfield's comments. And so I did take time to go back and look at Dr. Redfield's comments that was made in a Q&A session. And these comments were made on July 24. And the question I'd been asked about was, did he make some comment about a 5% positivity rate? Well, I wanted to make sure that was in context. And so what Dr. Redfield says, it's important, though all of the material that we have put out, our guidelines or resource material or consideration documents, they are all put out with the intent to help facilitate, as was mentioned earlier, the full reopening of schools for face-to-face learning. That is what Dr. Redfield with the CDC is saying. And then he goes on, he says the goal line is to get a majority of these students back to face-to-face learning. And then the question was asked about positivity rates. And he said it was really in reference to hotspots across the country, and he referenced a 5% positivity rate for hotspots, but then he said, so clearly there are many parts of our nation that are having infection rates that would not be inconsistent with, again, our guidance, and it's just guidance to consider it to be more cautious, particularly in those areas that have prevalence rates of percent positive more than 10%. And so he emphasizes, one, the goal is to get the majority of our students back in face-to-face instruction. Secondly, what they're providing are guidelines to achieve that result. And thirdly, that they consider 10% positivity rate, as I've always indicated, sort of the standard that you're trying to achieve. Now, I'm not happy with the fact that we've edged up a little bit more than 10%. But as Dr. Redfield points out, there's a lot of factors to consider in that, one of them being in some of the counties, those are positivity rates that come from congregate facilities. But we want to look at that whole, and our objective is, under health guidelines, to be prepared for school as it is in the best interest of the children. Yes.
We've heard from some people who have called the Ready for School Resource Center and said that nobody had answers to their questions. Do you think that indicates a lack of a sufficient plan for school or communication or answers, et cetera?
Is that, that's you, Johnny.
So anytime you set up a hotline like that, it's very possible that those answering the call are not going to have the answer at that moment. Where we can, we provide the answers, but where we can't, we also take the information. We seek to find the right resources and connect the caller with those resources. I would also point out that there has been an overwhelming number of calls over the last few days, as you might expect, and the team that's there is doing the best they can to answer the calls as they come in, take the information, and then follow back up with the callers once they get the information for them.
And I will add that it is a learning curve, and it's nice to have still a couple weeks before school starts to try to improve on the processes, and part of the process is the responses from the Department of Health, the responses from the Department of Education, to make sure that we're fully coordinated and prepared to give the right guidelines.
High school football, by the way.
As I indicated earlier, I guess it was last week, that we're prepared to stick with the AAA schedule, which is the Arkansas Activities Association, and that they will be sending out a notice today that based upon the recommendations and the consultations, I should say, from the high school sports advisory group, and they're prepared to stick with that plan and to continue into next week's contact drills. Is there any questions remotely?
Yes, Governor, this is Chelsea Helms with KWA.
And first, welcome back. I have a question for you and a question for Dr. Romero. For you, is there anything from the governor's meeting in Washington that directly relates to Arkansas? And for Dr. Romero, a follow-up question to yesterday about the nursing home here in Hot Springs that reported Wednesday in its congregate care report 10 fatalities and 63 cases, and those don't seem to be making its way into the health department report, and I was wondering if there's an update on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil, and those are good questions. And the answer is yes. I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. I finished my term as co-chair of the Council of Governors meeting with at the Pentagon, with the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, the White House, and we had most significantly the HHS was there, that we spent a significant amount of time talking about testing. I had the opportunity to raise issues about testing in our commercial labs, and I'm very pleased with the response and the intensity in accelerating the commercial lab testing capability as we go into August. So there were some very good meetings, and I hope they'll produce continued results. Dr. Romero.
Thank you very much for asking that question again. We can follow up on that. So, yes, there were 10 cases that you noted yesterday. These cases actually have been reported to us. Some of them may actually be in the HAI, the hospital-acquired infection data bank. There's some discrepancy about the funeral homes not reporting some of these cases to the health department, and then the merging of different databases that have this information. So in general, it's a confluence of a number of little factors that we're sorting out as we're getting these patients. But some of these were known to us. Some of these are older. These are not all cases that occurred on the same day.
Next question.
This is Mike McNeil at MagnoliaReporter.com. I have a question for Dr. Romero. Doctor, when do you expect the Department of Health to start making available building and school district level figures for the number of students, faculty, and staff who are absent due to COVID-19?
So let me go back and state that we have never provided that information in the past. Even with the outbreak of mumps that occurred in the northwest section of our state, that was not provided. We're looking at possibly giving countywide or with the help of ACHI, that is school district-wide information, but we're not sure that we can get down as granular as you are asking for.
Next question.
Governor, this is Chelsea Hamilton, WA. Dr. Romero said yesterday that we will continue with the back-to-school plan for now and, quote, wait and see if there are significant outbreaks. So what we want to know, what exactly constitutes as a significant outbreak? How is the state planning to measure that, and how is this going to differ from district to district?
Very good question, and we have prepared a different degrees of response based upon whether the risk is low or moderate or high risk in the community. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that criteria that the Department of Health will give the chief principal guidance on in consultation with the Department of Education. A good example, again, is if you take Lee County and you have a high positivity rate, you've got to look at where that's coming from. If it's coming from the correctional facilities, well, I don't know that you would want to penalize a school and put them in a high-risk category. That's the kind of overlay that you would have to look at the particular time. And so those are some tabletop exercises that we can continue to work on between now and school as these questions will pop up. But there will be that kind of analysis that will be given by the Department of Health. Did anybody want to add to that?
Just a follow-up, Governor. Can you explain if there are any specific metrics or criteria behind those numbers?
Well, one of them that you will look at is a positivity rate. You'll look at that in more detail. Secondly, you'll look at where the school district is and how many schools are impacted by the particular positive case. And you'll try to look at it, as Dr. Romero said, as granularly as possible. And so positivity rate is relevant. You're also looking at the number of cases as a factor. I think you're looking at the number of testing that we're doing in the community. And then you can also look at, we don't have any level of details on the response of the community in terms of action items, but those are the kind of factors that would be measured in trying to give the school guidance from the Department of Health and the Department of Education.
Governor, this is Jamie Weiss with 4029 News. Two questions for you. First, I just wanted to clarify, did you say that sports teams will be able to make contact next week? And then my other question is, are there more plans for the Department of Health to host mass testing events for COVID-19? I know when I looked on the ADH website, there's only a few more events scheduled for the next few days, and was curious if you plan to continue with those given the increased testing numbers we saw just yesterday.
In the first part of the question, yes, and I believe the AAA schedule is that they can move into contact drills tomorrow. And that is important for preventing injury. You can't expect them to be prepared for a season if you cannot be prepared physically. Secondly, we recognize that if we didn't, they're already having the drills as a team. And so with our experience thus far, they are authorized to move into the next step, which is contact drills. And that begins tomorrow. And the AAA will be notifying the different school districts that they can proceed with that. And then the next part.
Thank you for that question. The Department of Health continues to plan to the future for testing events. One of the things we don't want to run into is testing fatigue, where there's a constant availability of these and people don't come out for them. We also, as the governor pointed out, we're looking at areas in the state where we're seeing more cases and where we need to focus on. So, no, we have not given up with our testing, our mass testing, and we are making plans into the future.
Governor, this is Andrew with AP.
Andrew, you're a little slow on the switch today.
I know, it's a Friday. Wanted to ask you about it, going back to the teacher leave fund. Wanted to see if you or Secretary Key could talk a little bit more about how that $20 million estimate was reached at, and if there's a sense of how many teachers that would end up covering. And if that fund gets depleted, are you planning on requesting additional money for leave for teachers?
Secretary Key, I'll let you give the estimates.
Andrew, that was, of course, you know, it was very difficult to come up with a formula for that, but we estimated that based on an extreme overestimation of the number of community cases, the daily rates that the governor reports. So we extremely overestimated that by more than double, and in some cases it's even close to triple what the daily case numbers are. And then we took that percentage of the population across the state and applied that at the school level. And then taking the average salary across all positions in a school, used that to calculate the number. And then in consultation with other stakeholders, the initial number that we looked at was around $15 million, and there was a very valid concern that maybe that wasn't enough. And so that's where we landed on the final $20 million. And the reason that, to go back to a question that was posed earlier, the reason that we're looking at through the end of the calendar year is because right now the CARES Act funds have to be expended by the end of the calendar year. So without any type of congressional action, we have that restriction on those funds.
While you're there, this is Mike.
Let me add that as to the future, that's speculative as to whether the need is greater or less. We'll monitor that, and we'll also wait and see. I expect if there's another CARES Act package from Congress, that'll certainly include, hopefully, additional assistance to the schools as they do reopen. Just a couple more questions. I think I'm here.
Governor, this is Michael Aaron with THV 11. Just one quick question for you. So what would be the criteria for shutting down a school? And then secondly, we have a question for Secretary Key. Just a clarification, is it okay for a school district to still offer those virtual options for parents, whether it's a hybrid or 5 day a week?
This year? And on your first part of your question, we don't shut down a school. It would just be moving to online options. And that's the whole purpose of the blended educational system for this next year. And I previously indicated in response to a question some of the factors and criteria that would go into the evaluation of the Department of Health, from positivity rate to the number of cases to a very granular look at the circumstances in that community.
Yes, our expectation at the department is still, and has been since we started planning for this school year, that the blended options would be available should the need arise for either a short-term or a longer-term closure of buildings. That also became an option that districts provided to parents, that if they wanted to go virtual again, if that was an option that worked for them, they made that opportunity available. That's why the governor's support for the Wi-Fi access point has been so important, and why the continued work on broadband access across the state is so important. But also just to say that, the whole premise was that when we started back in the fall, we would start with on-site instruction and that option being available to all families that needed that. The alternatives would be available for those that felt more comfortable taking advantage of some limited or remote opportunity.
The final question will be right here at the table.
So just following up on the contact drills, are there any safety guidelines that go along with that, or is it just regular, you know, normal contact drills for football? Sorry.
Just their normal safety protocols.
There's nothing.
They have, certainly, they have requirements in place, but it allows for the contact. And so we'll try to get you any more specific guidance on that. But we already have in place, you know, the safety guidelines for football and contact sports. And so it would be within those parameters that we'd have to refer you to. With that, thank you. I hope you all have a good and a safe weekend, and we'll see you Monday, hopefully.